It's Wednesday, June 22nd, 2011, and you're listening to episode 236 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 59 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Pat.
This is Wayne.
My mojo's all off. We're sitting in different places.
So we're finally sitting in a sensible arrangement where Pat is sitting next to the source of cooling and you are not.
I know.
Yeah, so Chad doesn't have to actually wear his parka in the, in the middle of summer.
I hate the cold. I love the heat.
I am the exact opposite.
Well, which is a perfectly sensible thing to say, or a perfectly sensible way to be. It just never made sense that you would always sit here. Because in the summer, that's the air conditioning vent. In the winter, that's the window we have cracked.
The window where it's cold. Yeah. Do you know why I sat there?
So you could complain about sitting there?
That. And all the chairs were really crappy, except the one over there.
Yeah, they're all still really crappy.
But they've changed. So now you're sitting actually in the same kind of seat that I am.
The one I had the one that was sitting here where it would be optimal for me to sit, had a screw out of it, and it was a stabbing, pointy screw. And you really hate us, don't you?
At some point, we're having like a Fear the Boot bake sale to raise money for chairs.
Dude, you know, as long as I have been doing this show, I have been so tempted to go to like Office Max and get myself an office chair just for this show. So
it's not a very strong temptation if you've resisted it for 5 years straight.
We should go chair shopping.
Well, think about this. We do this once a week and for about a little over an hour. And for that hour, I'm sitting here like, man, I should really go and get an office chair. But then that hour is over and I'm going home and I'm not thinking about it anymore. And throughout the whole week, I'm not thinking about it. But when I come in, I should really get that office chair.
So the moral of the story is, if I would have stolen Chad's chair a couple months ago, they would have switched a while back.
Probably.
But the irony is that the chairs that we're sitting in are identical.
Oh, no. I have his old chair.
Oh,
I stole it weeks ago.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it's a nice chair. Wayne's smart. He likes where he sits.
Yeah, you weren't here, so I took it.
Yeah.
I like where I sit. I like your chair. Done.
Yeah.
We are between March of Dimes auctions right now, so I have nothing to report in that regard. And I'd love to tell you how the previous one turned out, except we're recording this episode before the auction ends. So
Turned out great.
Yeah, it turned out wonderfully. We're very
pleased.
Thank
you all.
Thank you for donating.
So much wonderful buzz about this one. Yeah. Twitter has just been on fire about this. Yeah, I mean, Fred Hicks himself has been tweeting about it. And
the man himself. I'm sorry.
So, since we really have no announcements, which I'm sure breaks everybody's heart, we're going to go straight into a subject, and Wayne, I'm going to let you start this one off, because from what I understand, you're going to take the for, and I'm going to take the against. The DC reboot.
I don't know if reboot's really a fair way to put it, though. I mean, their numbers are rebooting, but there is some continuity that's sticking around.
Okay, well, let's start then by, why don't you set up for people that aren't in the know in comics what DC is about to do?
Okay. As of September, every DC book that's part of their main universe, there are a couple of titles that they've kept out of this, is going to restart with a number one. This is going to be after a current storyline going on called Flashpoint, where they're going to basically reset the universe. It's not jumping back to, you know, year one or anything like that. The heroes will be established heroes, but it's a new continuity. So essentially they're doing a, let's wipe out the stuff that's come before now, which is only about 20 years old because they did this 20 years ago for Crisis on Infinite Earths. And they're starting everything with the new big jump.
All right, now, but you say if they're wiping out continuity, but the heroes are already established. I mean, isn't the origin story and the first villains they encounter and how those first villains...
Oh, this is DC. That stuff changes constantly.
Well, I know, but my point is, though, isn't that part of the continuity? Is the... kind of formative moments?
Well, they'll have a history. It's just you'll be discovering the new history as you go.
Isn't this just another way so that DC can retell the Batman origin again?
Actually,
extra time. I mean, they just love to have that over and over and over.
Actually, it's more the Superman one they do that with. Batman, they don't do it.
I love Batman, but my God, I've read his origin story and seen it so many times.
All the characters being impacted, Batman seems to be the least.
Well, I was going to ask,
keeping more of his history than any of the others so far that I've heard.
Detective Comics, is it going to go back to number one?
Detective
That's
Comics
pretty huge, because where are they on that one? Are they up in the thousands now?
Not quite. There's been no comic book that I know of that's made it up into 1,000.
Okay, because
the
I know
longest
back...
running one is one of the is either Detective or Action, and those are both resetting back to 1.
Wow, that's huge.
We're within 50 issues of them breaking 1,000, and they're resetting them back to 1.
I would have waited for those to hit 1,000 and then did it.
All right,
yeah, give it another couple months.
So, Wayne, I've got some pretty cynical things to say, and it sounds like Pat does too. But before I start, I want you to take a swing here. Why do you think this is a good idea? Why are you supporting this?
I'm excited because this is the biggest event in comics since Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Okay.
I'm excited because I'm collecting at a time this is happening. I think it's a wonderful chance to jump on new readers because they're actually getting, you know, mainstream publicity.
Okay.
But as part of this, they're also launching same day digital. Up until now, you couldn't buy a comic on the exact same day the physical copy came out in digital format. As of these number ones, you can buy digital or physical the exact same day, and it's a dollar cheaper for digital.
Now, the idea of having same-day digital that's delivered to a tablet or something like that, I think is great. 100% support it. That part I'm completely behind. In fact, I think they have waited entirely too long to get around to doing this.
And actually, so, that's why I think they're doing all the number ones at this point. That is the big push, is the digital. The number ones are, if you're going to get new readers that are only reading the digital stuff, let's not give them 600s, 300s.
Right.
Let's start them at number one.
And especially for someone like me, where I'm not a comics collector, I am not as interested in the tangible product with a comic as I am with, let's say, a role-playing game. And so I would have no problem paying, I don't know, $1, $2, whatever a month to get some particular title that just shows up in my email box. So this is something that I think has been a long time coming, and I'm very glad they're doing that. That part I have zero objection to. My beef here with the reboot is it strikes me that in doing a reboot, you basically have two options. And I realize this is going to come off something like a false dilemma, but I don't think it entirely is, because I think these really are kind of the two fair ways of looking at it. You either change quite a bit about the stories to make them brand new.
Right.
But let's be honest, the nature of our culture, especially in regard to our comic book heroes, we don't want them changed too much. We'll accept slow evolution. You know, Batman got darker over time, things like that. But the idea that suddenly, for example, and I'm totally making this up, but let's just say they decide that, for example, now Batman, instead of the guy whose parents died, is someone who is bitten by a radioactive bat and mutates into water. Nobody's going to accept that, okay?
Well, Johann would. If he's flying on a mutant bat.
Confederate
on the moon.
Dinosaur, right.
Yes. Yeah.
There is a core concept to each character that if you go outside of that core concept,
precisely,
makes people uncomfortable.
Exactly. People are going to say, look, this is
like the uncanny valley of comic book heroes.
Maybe. Well, there's a point, though, where somebody's going to say, this isn't Superman anymore. This is something else. The opposite choice is to keep them pretty faithful to the originals, which leads me to the question of then, why bother rebooting? I mean, really what you're doing is you're kind of going back to number one in the hopes of drawing in new people. But I really don't know that that is going to have the effect they hope. I really don't know that that alone is going to open this market and draw in tons of new people, because they're like, wow, I'd love to pick this up, but it's on issue 500. I can never find 499 back issues, so I'm just not going to read it. I don't really think that's the thinking with most people. Because
I think most people will be like, if I want 499 back issues, I'll just go to Pirate Bay and get them instead of trying to collect them. I mean,
or I'll start trying to watch Doctor Who.
I mean, exactly. I know, right? What idiot would do that? I'm on 1976. But for me, I look at it like this, too. It's like, I love Batman. I think Batman's great. I don't read Batman. Mainly because I don't read superhero comics, except the stuff that Wayne kind of parses out, and he comes to me, he's like, you will like this, you will read this. And I'm like, thank you.
It's kind of funny. It's like a filter. Let's say I buy 12 titles one week. That's a big week. I have another friend that will read probably 9 of those. And then out of those 9 he reads, Chad will read 3.
Yeah.
It's just a filter going through each person.
But, you know, if I thought about it and I wanted to get into Batman, it's like, man, I want to start reading Batman. I mean, that's a lot of history. That's a lot of back history. I could never get into that. Where do you pick that up? What title do you pick it up at? But you know what? I can get it on electronic. I can get it at the beginning. I can get in on the ground floor.
Well, but here's the thing.
Why not?
I've said the same thing to you about Doctor Who. Despite the fact that Doctor Who, yes, I realize they have, you know, a new Doctor, but they've never outright rebooted the series.
It's not like Battlestar Galactica.
Right. And so, but the thing that you've always said to me is, look, they tell these stories in such a way to, yes, there are nods to things in the history. If you know the full history, you'll get a little more out of it than someone who doesn't. But
it's absolutely true.
They also still write the stories in such a way that someone who's coming in for the first time can at least kind of parse out what's going on. And as someone who doesn't read comic books, who's not an avid comic book follower, I have grabbed comics recently in various comic shops, and I can page through them, and I have an idea of what's going on, especially with the more well-known heroes.
I mean, if you're talking...
And so I don't per se see that...
The digital media thing is
definitely might draw some new readers. That one I will grant.
I don't necessarily agree with you on that point. The digital media, we're totally even on. The point about getting on the ground floor, Wayne... You know, lends me these comic books and they're really good. And he's like, hey, what do you think of this character? I'm like, okay, that's kind of interesting. And he's like, here, I have a mini series on it. And he lends me that. Well, I'm reading this and it's like Darkwing. And not Darkwing Duck, but Nightwing.
I say I do buy Darkwing Duck.
Nightwing.
I fully support Darkwing Duck.
Darkwing Duck's great. In fact, they even rebooted it. But anyway, they...
There's been no reboot of Darkwing Duck.
What did they just...
That's in continuity.
They rehatched it.
Yes. So anyway... Well, anyway,
that was foul, Dad.
So I'm just going to try it. Never mind.
He's pissed off, Wayne. You better be ready to duck.
Yes. So anyway, you know, Wayne's lent me like Nightwing or something. And I'm sitting there, I'm reading, I'm enjoying the hell out of it. And then the next day I'm like, who was this? Okay. Why were they like this? Okay. They're going to this town. Is this town Gotham? What is Bloodhaven? It's right next to Gotham, like across the canal, across the river. Is it like a suburb? Wayne's great. He's the Wikipedia of comic books.
Those are the most fun conversations I have, to be honest, when it's going into the history of this stuff.
Yeah. But you know what? Most people don't have a great friend like Wayne, who gives you free comic books and then tells you everything you want to know about them. I have that opportunity so I can get to it.
Right.
If I did not have Wayne in my life, I wouldn't have that. I would go into a comic book shop going, and I would just have to do too much research. I mean, people would say, yeah, you can go to Wikipedia and you can learn about all this stuff. And it's just like, it's so impenetrable. It's so big. It's been going on for so long. And to be honest with you, it's so muddled. It's a big multiverse with multiple plot lines that's been going on for years and years and years.
And that was the whole point of Crisis on Infinite Earths when it originally happened over 20 years ago. We have all these alternate realities. We have all these stories going. Let's simplify and give a new jump on point.
Well, that was going to be another question I have is, are they narrowing the titles? Because I know in some cases they may be running 2-3 titles at once on one hero. Marvel seems to be worse about that than DC. But are they narrowing it down so there is now only going to be one comic book per superhero?
Nope. No. There are still multiple Superman and multiple Batman titles.
So there will still be a great deal of muddling.
Are those mainly the ones, though? Is it mainly Superman and Batman, or do they have multiple titles of a lot of the other ones, too?
It's Superman and Batman.
Okay,
I can't think of another character that has multiple titles besides the two of them. It's just those are the mainstream characters that people want to read from those companies. There are different takes in each book. This hasn't launched yet, so we don't know exactly what the titles are going to be like, but... When Crisis on Infinite Earths happened and they relaunched Superman then, they did one title was focused on Clark Kent and Daily Planet stories. One title was focused on Superman stories. And one was focused on Superman teaming up with the other characters around the DC Universe. So each one had a different focus, but they were all Superman titles. And Batman kind of worked the same way. Batman and Robin is a title for Batman and Robin. Batman the Dark Knight was a title focused on... just Batman, things like that.
RPG topic for today is the one that we have put off for, I think, 3 episodes now. So we're going to finally get down to it, which is rewarding players and characters. And what we are talking about here is basically the Game Master's decision of when, how, and why to reward players and characters in the game. Now, this could be in the form of RP progression, new items, levels, skill points. There's all sorts of ways this can manifest. And there are two basic angles that I want to take this from. The first is to talk about the types of reward and to debate their various merits and whatnot. The second is then to move on and say, okay, putting that debate aside, presupposing that we are in a game that has a pretty traditional system of rewards, levels, skill points, items, whatever, to give some tips on ways to handle it, mostly based on things we have done catastrophically wrong in the past. So let's start off with that. Chad, I'm going to go and pitch it to you, as I think we know right where you're going to start this.
The game is its own reward. You know, I just kind of throw that out there and say that, but honestly, I'm of two minds on it. On one hand, for me personally, as a player, I don't need reward. I don't need the coin, the XP, the items, or whatever. I enjoy playing the game, and that is my fun. That is my reward. I don't even need level advancement or anything. I do character advancement. I my character's personality changes and evolves over time, and that's what's rewarding to me. But that's just me. You know, I don't force that on my players.
All right, but if I can unpack that a bit, yeah. It sounds like, though you chose the phrase, the game is its own reward, it sounds like what you're actually describing is not per se quite so simplistic, but rather it is the advancement of the characters, the advancement of the plot, the advancement of the world. Mm-hmm. It's more than just the pure experience of playing the game is its own reward.
To me, that is it. Just playing the game, seeing what the story is, seeing how the story unfolds, being an integral part of the story. When you watch a movie, do you get a reward if you don't count like popcorn and stuff? I mean, you're paying, you're sitting there, you're being entertained. I see a role-playing game similar but different. You go, there's a story going on, and you are the main character in the story. It's the old thing. It's like in a horror movie, the girl's going to open up the closet, and you know the killer's in there, and you're screaming at the movie, no, don't open the closet. Well, in a role-playing game, you are that character who's about to open up the closet, and you don't have to. You don't have to follow, and you make your own story. So, like I said, I see it the same way. I don't need coin and drops and this sort of stuff from a movie.
I think if I was to go for a bridge product there, mm-hmm. I wouldn't go for movies. I'd say more like a choose-your-own-adventure.
Right, right.
When you play through a choose-your-own-adventure, and yes, I realize in some of the spin-off type choose-your-own-adventure things, you could advance and gain items and levels and mm-hmm. such. But in the actual choose-your-own-adventure books, you didn't gain anything by the experience of playing the game.
Right.
Apart from seeing what choices would bring about.
Your reward was a big plot point.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't even mean plot advantage, like, you know, you gain blackmail power over the king or whatever. No, it's just like, I would rather you learn someone is blackmailing the king. What do you do about it? And flip to page 59 if you investigate, sort of thing. I don't know. Like I said, it's just not something I need. I don't need my characters to level. I don't need the powerful sword. I don't need the money. I don't need all this other stuff. And that's fine. People who want the big sword and the experience and all this, and beyond the reason for getting experience of at level one, my character is not what I mechanically what I envision the character to be. So I need 5 levels or 10 levels or however many levels to get that's different. To me, that's different. That's getting your character where you want it to be. Let me ask you this. What is a reward? You are motivating a player to come back next week?
I think a good analogy here as we're talking about it. This actually reminds me of a conversation that I had with a guy I work with about what does somebody want to get out of a job?
Yeah.
Obviously, everybody wants to go in, make a good paycheck, blah, blah, blah. But if you were to really ask somebody to rank out, here in order are the top 3 or 5 things I want out of this job. There are some people where the number one thing they want to do is they will do whatever it takes, provided they make the best money, climb the corporate ladder, and that is their sense of success. Other people will say, you know what? I don't care. I'll happily make less money if it's a less stressful job, closer to home, and I spend more time with my family.
Other people are like, I want a sense of accomplishment.
I want a sense of accomplishment.
I want to do something meaningful.
I'm getting none of that, but this is a job I really care about. Mm-hmm. It's a charity, or it's a creative art or something like that I'm really passionate about. And so that's what I get out of the job. Some people want recognition. They want praise. And everybody, you know, yeah, there's obviously a lot of overlap, but everybody wants something a little bit different out of a job. And I think role-playing games in this regard are no different. Mm-hmm. You know, Chad, you mentioned the first thing being, look, the game is its own reward.
Yeah.
Seeing the plot, interacting with the plot is its own reward. I think another thing that's similar to, but not the same as that, would be personal progress.
Right.
For example, in our current campaign, we have characters who have a variety of goals, such as reestablishing positions they once had, building new societies, constructing buildings. I mean, there's these long-term personal progress goals. It could be something...
Getting confronted by an ex-lover. It hasn't happened yet, Sir William, but it's on the cards.
Finishing revenge, yeah. Solving a mystery. But
I think all that's great.
Yeah, and these are things that a player character will impress or may impress upon their upon the game. And seeing that played out within the game is a form of reward. Yeah.
See, and when I run a game, I understand that the game is its own reward for me, not necessarily for everyone else. And I don't need to inflict my tastes on everyone else when it comes to that. I think that they want to play, they get into the story, they become a good character, and they play every day. And for that, they want a good story and a magical item. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that at all. It's different strokes for different folk. It's just a matter of taste. But when I run the game, I like to try to think outside the box. One of my big pet peeves in, say, a fantasy game is the plus one sword. The plus one sword is so damn boring. So I want, you know, if somebody gets some item that is a plus one item or whatever, there is a story. It's not plus one. There's a story behind it. It's special. It's unique. It's, or at the very least, it's interesting. I try to think outside the box. Like in our current campaign, the player rewards that I'm giving are twofold. I haven't given anybody a real magical item yet. I think somebody got you got a hat just because it was a really nicely right. made hat. And that's really about it.
Well, then we spent the whole first campaign leading up to the hat.
Yeah. You got a non-magical hat that makes people like you just slightly more than they already do. And it took you an entire campaign to get that. But I have given Pat's character a kingdom. I have given Dan's character a knoll society. And I'm trying to think out of the box. This is stuff that is tied into their character. Pat's character is playing a former ruler who has lost his kingdom, and he's a man without a land. And you guys did all of this stuff. It just didn't fall from the sky. You did all this stuff, and you got that. And you totally, I'm looking at Pat when I say you, because I'm making these hand motions like everyone else can see it. But Pat, you did not expect that in the least bit. In fact, you even told me you kind of saw that's where I was going, but you couldn't believe
yeah.
that that's what I was going to do.
I thought
do.
It was way too early. I would yeah. have figured it would have been sort of way down the road. It yeah. took me back.
To me, rewards are something that definitely have to be tied in with the character and their personality,
right.
and not only the player's wants, but the character's wants and desires as well.
See, that seems like for the big rewards, that makes a lot of sense. But for me, what I really enjoy are the games that have built in, let's say, Savage Worlds bennies or bullets from Skies
yeah,
of Glass.
Those are really
things
fun,
things like
too.
That where you're playing in character, you're doing what the GM wants. The GM can reward you right then and there, and it's a small thing.
It's an incidental thumbs up, yeah.
Those,
I love that, too.
I absolutely love those. Those are motivation.
Yeah.
I think in the case of, like, I'm giving you the big thing, mm-hmm. I don't think that's really motivating someone to role-playing in
it's
character.
It's a different...
But right then, a lot of small things,
yeah.
the incidental ones, I think that does.
That's a macro and micro level. I wish our game had more of a mechanic like that. And hell, why wish? Let's just do it. You know, we should come up with a thing where we could do that, where we have poker chips and we throw them out to each other. The coolest thing that I ever saw that used with, and I'm sure there's probably half a dozen games out there that incorporate this, but it was in Chris Mays's game, first Blaxploitation game he did. Everybody was getting bennies. They were role-playing. He was passing out bennies to them. And then people were making such funny jokes and doing such cool stuff. Other players were taking from their personal benny pile and giving them to that player because they were being so awesome. To me, as a game master, if I were running that game, I'd be like, oh my God, best group ever. I have arrived.
I've seen that happen
this
twice.
Perfect synergy. Competition is removed, and it's just people having fun, telling a story, rewarding each other. And I think that that's kind of a problem in games. Like the Benny thing, you can kind of get away with that. But if you even if you take it back to a sort of medium or even a macro level, like the castles and the Knoll Society and the kingdoms and stuff, players can't reward each other. Now, I'm sure, again, there's probably some narrative games out there where this is more of a core component and you give each other narrative control. But I'm talking traditional, normal games. Players cannot really reward each other.
Yeah, you don't per se have a currency with which to pay each other. Now, I want to speak a little bit here in defense of the more traditional forms of advancement, specifically stat advancement, item advancement, levels, whatever it might be. Because I think it would be very easy for us to dismiss that and say, well, if that's what you're interested in, then either A, you're playing a tactical stats-driven game, it's not the sort of game we play, and just kind of wave it away. Or on the flip side, to do something even worse and say, well, clearly you're running an immature power game and just laugh it off. But here's the way that I look at it. When I play a character in a game, like Chad, the primary thing I am interested in is not the advancements of stats and stuff. But let's for a moment look at real life. Throughout the course of my life, I have matured. I have gained skills. I have accumulated influence over people. I have accumulated social standing. I have accumulated material possessions. These parts of my life have progressed. And I realize life has ups and downs, or sometimes you lose that.
There's an opposite side of the coin where certain skills get rusty, certain friends go away and don't like you anymore, things break.
You lose a job. I mean, I realize
that isn't really represented in a role-playing game.
But the point is that nonetheless, if you look at what I believe to be the average curve of the typical person's life, I mean, while it may not be a constant, fast upward shot, if you look at where they started off as a child versus where they are into adulthood, they will have advanced in those ways. Yeah. And so to me, that is a perfectly natural, organic part of the game, is to say, look, my character has been out there flying on the spaceship for years. Why isn't he getting smarter? Why isn't he learning more about astrophysics? Why hasn't he spent his paycheck to buy a better pistol than the one he had? In a similar way,
where is my pistol plus one?
And somewhat similar to that, I think there is also a certain level of motivation in the new shiny. Look, part of the reason that you work hard at your job might be because you want to live in a slightly nicer house than the one you have now. And I don't mean that to say you have to be some rabid consumerist. I'm just saying that you always want to improve your station a little. In the same way, it is totally natural to sit there and look at the player's handbook and say, damn, there's some really cool third level spells.
Oh, yeah.
And if we don't ding, I don't get to cast any third level spells. I mean, Pat, this was something that made you really push for us to level up in our current game.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was going to say, along those lines, I really enjoy getting new things for my characters. And it's not, you know, you're sort of harping on the whole plus one thing, and that's not what it's about to me. To me, it's about having something new and something different than what you had. And you know, to take this to real life, I'm looking around the table, specifically I'm looking right in front of you. You have two shiny new gadgets sitting on the table in front of you. We each have brand new phones sitting around the table here. I look at it just like that in life. For me, a new magical item or whatever is like the new cell phone. It's the new data pad or something like that.
It helps keep the character fresh for me.
It does. And it's like, and that's something that you get that. I mean, you have these for a while and then you know, you get a new thing because it's something new. It's like that with in real life.
I always love my hacked Nook.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. It's a brand new thing to you and you love it. You're having a good time with it. Yeah. Now, 6 months down the road, you might want something else.
6 months? No, baby. I love it.
But a new phone, certainly. I mean, that's human nature. Same thing with games. You know, even with games,
We're
constantly playing new
lovers,
games, you know, doing new things. So it adds some variety of things that I can do in my gaming. You know, instead of using the same old standard spell or sword that I've had from the very beginning, this one does something different. And it's not, to me, it's not about that it's a plus two
Here's my philosophy. Here's my philosophy on that. It's not wrong to want that. I'm not saying that my personal view of, you know, the game is its own reward should be anyone else's. My view is also, if you need that sword, that spell, that attribute, that skill, that whatever, and I'm running the game, If you need that to make that character more interesting, there's absolutely nothing wrong with wanting that. And you can have it. If you come to me and ask me and say, Chad, I want to be able to cast 10th level spells. I want to be able to cast 10th level spells. I think I should. I think it'll make the character. If I look around and say, does anybody have a problem with this? And everyone's like, no, he won't abuse it. It's not going to be too bad. You can have it.
Sure thing. Now, the one thing that I will say, though, there too is, and that's fine for like from an advancement standpoint, if you're going to do it for everything. But if I were to come to you and say, Chad, I just can't play this character anymore unless you give me the sword of,
you can have,
you know,
it.
Of beautification.
Yes.
You know, of
you can have
the right sword now. Of pointing to hot woman.
Put it on your
plus five
right now.
Right there. That's boom. That. I don't like that because the other part of it is I may want it, but it's also fun to obtain it.
Yeah.
You to go out and role play through and getting it. Not to just you say, boom, you've got it and I have it from right then and there. I mean, part of the fun is sort of somewhat questing to get it or earning it.
Did I hand you the kingdom on a silver platter?
No.
Well, and not saying
yes
that
and
the
no.
kingdom.
You know,
well, I mean, that's where the plot was going,
right.
You know.
But,
and
no, you could have
screwed that
up. I see what Pat's saying, though.
But yeah, no, it doesn't mean as much because you haven't earned it. So it's a twofold thing, what you're asking for. You're asking for the sword of pointing at hot women, which is fine. You want that item. You want what it does. You want the power, and that's great. You also want a second thing. You want the journey there. You want the experience of earning that. Not only do I have this, but I have this thing that is mine. I have made it mine.
Yeah.
And you know what? That is great. That is wonderful. As a game master, I don't like taking players down the path to stuff personally. Again, that's just me. And it's totally fine and reasonable to take players down that path of stuff. When you boil everything away and say, what is a role-playing game at its most base? You boil away the rules. You boil away the story. You boil away the characters. What is a game at its most base? It is a group of people trying to get these legitimate experiences out of a game. They want to be legitimately concerned for their characters. They want to feel they've legitimately earned something. They want to feel legitimately like there is a possibility that they can fail. They want the agony of defeat. They want the thrill of victory. And the game is a group of people making those legitimate experiences happen. And rewarding players is all about that. And I don't want anyone to think that I think rewarding players is bad. The game master should sit there and go, how can I reward a player? Not what can I give my player? Because they'll tell you what they want. They'll make it known. The question is, what is the best way to get them to that reward that will be the most fulfilling for them and for the rest of the party?
It sounds like we're about ready to segue into the second half of the discussion, which is the best ways to approach rewarding players. Mm-hmm. But I want to do sort of an intermission here.
Yeah.
Because, Chad, there was a question you posed.
Uh-oh. I think is this me going to prove my horrible hypocrisy?
No, actually, it's kind of funny.
I do that all the time.
It's actually kind of funny. because the question you posed was sort of a cynical joke, mm-hmm. but actually does sort of raise a point about this entire discussion. One of the things that the vast majority of players will agree upon is that some form of reward is important to them. Mm-hmm. And the question you shot back when we were framing this discussion a couple weeks ago was, why is there no GM reward?
That's right.
The GM, his only reward is supposed to be the joy of laboring for other people. But the players, damn it, they need the +2 sword.
That's right. The players get their +2 sword. What does the GM get out of it? He gets the joy of giving somebody a +2 sword.
Yeah, and laboring to write the plot surrounding that. And if he's lucky, maybe somebody will say thank you.
You know what?
And out the door.
Somewhat comically here, but actually also sadly, somewhat truthfully, I think that the reward for some GMs out there are the, you know, the Baron von Badass characters that they sort of that they'll make for themselves, because I think, and maybe it's subconsciously because of that, they're like, okay,
I've given
you guys all this stuff, all this awesome stuff. I don't get anything, so by God, I'm going to have my uber badass.
Do you think that's why some GMs punish the players? And what I mean by that is that they do stuff like the Baron Bond ad, the untouchable me that's in the game, or do...
I know you've been passive-aggressive once or twice.
I think
player.
Subconsciously, yes.
I mean,
Chad,
I'm not saying no. I have been, sure. How?
I could point to an instance where Gnarl was thrown up into the air by a certain gust of wind.
That was not against Gnarl. That was against the overuse and abuse of Featherfall in my game.
It doesn't matter. It's still a passive-aggressive move.
Gust of Wind is a perfectly legitimate spell, and it perfectly legitimately
He's always
affects it.
Shredding my clothing.
That
always.
Is true.
Always.
See? Yeah. You know.
Passive-aggressively doing anything he can against men.
Okay. Just wait until Pat cast Mist Form for the 37,000th time the next time against... I have a plan... Oh... Oh, you're going to get f***ed,
We've
sir.
Answered our question there, Dan. Or well, I guess the chance yeah, was I mean, that I kind of
okay,
brought
so,
into.
Okay, the so cynical question got the cynical answer, but what's the realistic answer?
I think the
it?
Realistic answer is yes. I think game masters, and it is dead-ass wrong, but I think there are game masters, and I think probably any of us sitting at this table who have game master for any length of time have done this at some point, have introduced something in the game to reward ourselves. A Baron Von Badass, a concept we just had to see in there, a character we just wouldn't let die, a plot point that just had to occur no matter what because we thought it was so cool as a way of rewarding ourselves because that's what we wanted out of the game. And I don't think a game master wanting something in particular out of a game is per se wrong in concept. But look, part of the role of being the game master is you're relinquishing a certain amount of control over the world, and you are also taking on the mantle of being a fair and reasonable arbiter and storyteller. And when you get to a point where what you want out of the game interferes with those roles, right, wrong, indifferent, you're failing as a game master.
Yeah.
And I think that when you set out to be a game master, you ought to find things that reward yourself, but they can't be GMing.
Right.
And
right.
That's why, for example, what I love seeing is I love getting people excited about my plots. Mm-hmm. I love seeing them surprise me with the way they solve problems.
Yeah.
You know, the joy I get is in basically building the world, putting it on the table, and watching how people interpret and how they deal with it. And that's a very benign thrill. It is not a Baron Von Badass, which I have done you know, way back in my GMing career. I will totally admit I have done.
Yeah, I think in its purest form, I think, Chad, what you were talking about for players is that whereas the story is its own reward, truly is the big one for the GMs.
Right.
I think it is like what you're saying, Dan. It's that as the storyteller, you are going to get your biggest thrill and reward out of seeing your players enjoy the story and maybe make it progress beyond what you even thought it was going to be.
And I suppose tangentially, in certain games, as an example, I'll throw out adversarial games where the intention is it's a tactical game where the GM and players are in a somewhat adversarial relationship. I have seen a handful of mechanics where the GM actually can advance. An example, and this is not exactly a role-playing game, it's a board game with pseudo role-playing elements, would be Descent. Mm-hmm. Whereas the game progresses, the Overlord or whatever he's called actually does gain additional power and does progress kind of like the characters do. And I'm sure there are role-playing games out there. I mean, maybe not major massive titles, at least not that I'm thinking of, but I'm sure there are games out there, you know, in the mid-market or the indie market or whatever, that do that sort of thing, that give the game master more stuff as the game goes on. All right, but let's get back to rewarding players.
It's hard as a player to reward the GM, because as a player, you have a character that can get things. The GM has the world. How do you
GM already has all the stuff.
Yeah, how do you give GM something... More.
And see, this is where I don't want to get on this too much, but I think the best reward the player can give the game master is thank you. You know, it was a great game. I appreciate the work you're doing. I'm not going to be a douche and try to sidetrack your plot at every turn just because I see your weakness.
The greatest reward that I have gotten recently is from Dan, and it was the last game we did. We were introducing some new characters in. And they were at the top of a mountain at a certain lodge. It was an orphanage, but it was at the top of a mountain. And one of the characters was up there, and he sees at the bottom of the mountain at night a small traveling group with torches. These were the new characters that were going to get introduced. And they're gnolls. Gnolls have night vision. They're trackers. They're hunters. They don't have torches. I didn't think of this. But the character sees them, and Dan's like, well, wait a minute, Chad. They wouldn't have torches. And I look at him. I go, Dan, If they didn't have torches, you guys wouldn't be able to see them and they'd pass right by. No problem. They have torches. Yep. That works.
Because a human played by John had to be able to spot them, and he's not going to see gnolls in the darkness in a valley 2 miles below without torches. Like, okay, they've got torches.
Yeah. And, you know, of course.
It makes no sense, but whatever.
Because it's totally unimportant. Yeah. And of course, it could have been hand waved where we say, okay, they don't have torches, and then they come up and then they encounter you and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? I didn't want to jump through those hoops. Yeah. I wanted to get the characters introduced so we can get on with playing. And Dan
as a player, gave me that. Playing the lawyer was not worth it. It's not like I was getting screwed by them having torches. I mean, it was it's lawyer and it was not necessary.
Right.
All right. So let's talk about the right ways to reward players. And we'll start off with the one that we beat to death on this show. But quite frankly, we do so because I don't think it can be beaten sufficiently to death, which is know your players. Know what the people individually want out of that game. And if you don't know, ask them. Say, look, what is important to you out of this game? Do you want levels? Do you want items? Is there a goal your character has in mind you're trying to achieve? Is there a way you'd like to see some things work out? Is there a theme you'd like to see explore? Know upfront what people want in terms of rewards, and then find ways to work those kinds of rewards into the game. Pretty self-contained thought. I don't know. At least I've got a whole lot really to expound.
Best example we have in our own group is if one of us were running a game for Chad, we know that if we give him a sword that has a +1, that's not going to motivate him to do anything. That's not going to be a reward that he cares about. And we know that because we know Chad.
Right.
That's right.
Well, and the other thing there, I think that I would take out of that is that you can reward each individual player differently. I don't think that you have to come up with one specific way of rewarding, and it's the same for everybody. Like you said, like for me, if I'm more into, I want a new item, the more typical rolling loot off of a treasure table kind of a thing. If that's my thing, then that's great for me, but that's maybe not great for Dan or Wayne. They want something else.
I agree with you. Mostly.
You have to reward consistently. Even if they're each getting a different type of reward, it all has to remain consistent. So, you know, you can't favor one over another,
but and that's part of what I was going to say. I have a bullet point here of be fair. And by be fair, I mean two things. One is what you just said, that if you were to quantify the rewardage you are handing out, that everyone is getting the same amount of reward, especially if they are all putting the same amount into the game. Now, I realize in certain games, someone playing more in character or being funny or having a major moment of personal progress may garner them a special reward. But I mean, overall, all things being equal, be equitable to all parties involved. But, and this is the point actually where I was going to slightly diverge from what you're saying, because I mostly agree with you, is I was running a game a couple years ago, and it was a sci-fi game, and one guy alone in the group was playing a soldier. And as the game went on and everyone was progressing in their individual ways, one of the things that this guy got was military grade powered armor and a machine gun. It made perfect sense for his character, but all of a sudden there were all these situations where he could walk in and by sheer force of arms make the rest of the party irrelevant. And so even if, let's take this over to D&D, let's say you want the +3 sword. That's just something you got to have. You're playing the paladin and your end game is you want to find the Holy Avenger.
Can we just start with the Holy Avenger?
But if I give that to you, that's fine. But if I do not give something similar to other people at the table, even if it's not what they care about, there's still the danger they may reach a point of insufficiency or irrelevance because of the fact that the way I've rewarded you has overshadowed them. Another example.
If everyone has a +3 sword, though, then nobody has a +3 sword.
Yep.
But another example would be, imagine if you're playing in a group that's fairly internally combative and you give one guy a kingdom and an army and nobody else has this. Once again, everyone else is...
Oh, see, you know, I've played that game.
You guys don't seem to mind too much.
Because it's not combative, but I've played the game.
You don't lord over us like that.
I've played the game where you have that. And there's ways around that. The kingdom is a large and complex bureaucracy, and the other players have charge of different aspects
but
of
see,
the
that's
bureaucracy.
The thing. You're being fair by splitting
exactly.
up the bureaucracy.
Exactly. Yeah. The king has ultimate executive right. power, but he isn't the captain of the guard.
Exactly.
And
imagine more like it was a monolithic cult of personality. Mm-hmm. That's more what I'm talking right. about. If there's a bureaucracy everyone can manipulate, you still rewarded them all equally, even if only one guy right. has the crown.
Let me tell you, that is tense right there. That is tense.
Well, and you know, it seems like the point that you're bringing up is, as a GM, you need to carefully consider the rewards for your players, because you have to live with those rewards that you distribute.
Oh, that was the next one down.
Okay, yeah, look at me.
Don't give them something you will regret.
Look at me, the straight man there. Yeah.
Don't give them something you will regret. One of the things I have to this day hated myself for was the day I gave Tim a ring of invisibility. Holy shit. The man was never visible a day in his life thereafter.
Well, would you be?
No. Yeah. Every plot yeah, point was solved by I go invisible, stab them in the back, rob their stuff, walk past the guards. The entire plot basically became I had to.
Yeah, I get that with mist form.
You know, I'll let you say that, but I've actually only used the spell like twice, I think.
Well, and at least
and it was literally the reason I use it, I was either do that or die.
Well, and well, then why didn't you just stand there and take it?
Well, exactly. Pat at least has limited castings. Not that we always do the best job of counting those, but he does have limited castings. I gave the dude a ring where basically whenever you put it on, you're invisible.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one ring. The only
Except
without
it's
the
not
Sauron.
Driving you evil. Yeah.
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 And well, so, no, yes, it actually did drive him evil.
Well,
I mean, think about it. No, you're right. You know, that's the thing. It's amazing that, you know, some people will take that and they will use it responsibly or, you know, not like a douche. And other people will just go crazy.
Right.
It's,
think
it's
about
fun.
It. It's like
everyone's different.
If you're going to give somebody something, do you not want them to use it? I gave Pat a kingdom and everything that goes along with it. The virtually unlimited treasury, right. the captain of the guard, the army, the lands, the people. All
the stuff
that.
We're not using.
All the stuff you're not using.
Well, and that's,
they don't want to deal with
well,
it.
See, that's, and that's the thing you got to ask yourself.
I don't care if he uses it. I want him to use it.
Everyone's different, but you got to sit down and say, look, when I put this mm-hmm. in the hands of so-and-so.
Right.
Or put it within reach of another party member, even though it was given to a different guy in the first place. Is this something where I'm going to end up regretting this for the rest of the campaign? And I'm going to basically be looking for a cheap excuse to take it back yeah. because of
everything has its panic button. Even the invisible man all the time. There's a dirty floor. There's a dusty room.
Oh, yeah, somebody, but it gets a little bit raining. Tired when it's constantly dusty, raining. People are spraying spray paint. I mean,
it's always snowing. Always.
Summon Tiger. I mean,
dude, you just give him the disadvantage of dandruff. That's all.
Yeah, there you go.
Uncontrollable flatulence.
I mean, well, what happens when you do that? And it's like you give him the ring of invisibility. Oh, that would be cool.
You got to take it back. I mean,
No. I think that you could talk to the guy. You just say,
yes,
listen.
Yeah, well.
You just say, listen, dude, Pat, mist form. Really? Every day at lunch, you mist form into the yeah. cafeteria.
Well, or something like what I
You have only used it twice.
What I should have done with Tim is basically sat down and said, okay, I gave you this ring. I can't blame you for using it because, I mean, I gave you a tool. Why wouldn't you mm-hmm. use it? But I wasn't expecting it to do this. Can we please reduce this so it only works for, like, 5 minutes once per day?
I wouldn't even say that. I would say, you mind cutting the out?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, just tone it. You're at a 15. Let's yeah. tone it back to 7.
Well, or if you have a player who says, you know what, I need to know what a 7 is, yeah. you could bring it down to, okay, it works for 5 minutes once per day or something to that effect. But
no, you have all that. You get together with the PCs and you have all the NPCs start being really goddamn passive aggressive. It's just like, I go invisible and I make the beer float to me and make it. Everyone ignores you.
Let's say, I know what you're.
No one talks to you.
I know what your answer would normally be that you haven't thrown out yet, Chad.
What's that?
And that's you give the enemy the invisibility ring, too.
Well, exactly. And two invisible people can see each other.
Well, but then once again, if everyone's yeah. not within the party set up fairly for this, now
everybody gets invisibility rings. The entire universe is invisible, but invisible people can see each other.
Yes.
Boom. Problem solved.
All right.
I take off my invisibility ring.
Similar thought to that is pace it for the length of the campaign. Now, I realize you don't always know how long a campaign will go because they typically die early or sometimes people get excited and they go on and on and on. But do be sure to pace yourself, because if you put them through, you know, a level a night or a new piece of gear every night, and this game goes on for 3 years, you may find, especially if that's not what you wanted from the start, was an epic level game, you've lost control of this. You need to sit down as a game master and basically say, okay, where are the characters at? Where can I tolerate them being? And for yourself, kind of map out a slow curve that will get them there. For example, in my Sunday Star Trek game, it's an episodic game. An episode lasts from 1 to 3 sittings. When they finish an episode, I have one person at the table roll a D10. Whatever they roll, everybody gets to add that many skill points wherever they like. Now, for anyone not familiar with the fastest Star Trek, it's a percentile-based system, so skills go from 1 to 100, and you have a lot of skills. Right. So having a couple points lets you progress.
Phaser. Yeah.
And after half a dozen missions, you may suddenly be a whole lot better in a skill than you were before. You're moving forward, but it's very measured. And in the same way, you know, if you're running a D&D game, you might want to say, okay, I'm going to give them a level, you know, once every other month or something. I don't know. It depends on your game and what's appropriate to it. But think through the speed at which you're doing this.
Let me give an example of something that I just did in our current game. I rewarded Wayne. Wayne wasn't getting the kingdom. Wayne wasn't getting the Knoll thing. And we haven't really gotten deep into Wayne's sort of plot line yet. So Wayne isn't getting much. Also, there are times when Wayne is not the combat powerhouse. He's the bard. That's fine. He didn't go into it thinking he was going to be the combat powerhouse.
Does that mean that there are times when he is the combat powerhouse?
No.
Because I haven't seen that yet.
There is now.
Uh-oh.
Because he has the ability to create this sort of stone golem out of the ground. And the thing is, it's not... I didn't make it to where it was.
I thought you were going to take the much simpler answer of the fact that VV is now planning his future levels. Within 2 levels, he's going to be more powerful than the rest of the party combined.
Oh, yeah. Holy crap.
One hopes. He needs it. But my thinking on giving him this, it's basically a pouch. It has this magic powder in it. You sprinkle the powder on the ground, and this rock monster comes out, and it's really powerful. He only has enough dust to do this 3 times. Well, the reason I did that is because there's a bunch of different reasons. One, I wanted to give Wayne something.
Right.
I don't think Wayne had been getting anything for a while. I wanted to give Wayne something. Wayne is not the combat powerhouse, and he's mentioned to me that he kind of wishes that he was a little bit more effective. Not you, not insane. Just
it's not that I want to kill stuff. It's that I don't want to be kidnapped every time we get in a fight.
Right. And so Wayne can be this, but because it only has 3 charges, he's not this all the time. He's only this when he needs it or when it would be really cool.
And this goes back to pacing and regret.
Yeah. Well, no,
I have no regret.
I actually have absolutely no regret. If he had full, unlimited uses of this, I still would not have a problem with it. But this is where the third point comes in.
Okay.
I wanted to make it special and interesting. I did not want to make it every time we roll initiative, here comes the rock monster.
Yes.
And then it's not special. It's not interesting. I want Wayne to sit here and go, Gnarl's down. Pat, he's about to die. These other characters can't get to us in time. I only have 2 more charges on this thing. Do I bring this out now? What does the future hold? Will I need this again? And it, you know, he makes that mental decision, and then he says, Chad, for my action, I bring out the pouch. And then everyone around the table has this, it just got real moment. And that's kind of what I wanted out of it. That's where I was going. Will that happen each and every time? Will my goal be accomplished with that? I don't know. I threw it out there. We'll see if it sticks and holds. I hope so.
Next tip is to always give the rewards meaning and context. We've talked a lot on the show in past episodes about how, for example, when characters level up, there ought to be some sense to it. There's a reason they gained a few stat points, and the stat points went into places that make sense. We talked about earning your reward. If you want that big special magic sword or custom gun, there's some work to it.
What about a sword gun?
Okay, if you want to play Final Fantasy VIII, there's a story behind it. You know, there's a progress to how you got there. It's something that has a place in the story and makes sense within the context of that character. And a related thought is I really recommend, I don't think you have to do this, but it's something I think adds a lot. is when you take the time to create your own rewards. And what I mean by that is instead of giving him the +2 sword, you give him the sword of Fenris Fallen. And it has all these kind of quirks to it. It has a story behind it. It has unique appearance behind it. Hell, go completely off that. Say, you know what? You just got through this place and spent a whole lot of time learning from the general of the fleet. You have a new trait of you can reroll any failed fleet strategy roll. This is nowhere in the book, but I'm just making it up on the spot because it makes sense for you. Give them something that really stands out as more than just the generic progression because of the fact that now all of a sudden these very...
feel that you're locked to the game.
Exactly. These blank statistical things suddenly start having character. Mm-hmm. They suddenly start adding to the character instead of just buffing the character.
Right. I like the ability especially because anything that makes the character more unique than someone else that's playing the same type of character makes that character more special to me.
Yeah, I remember back in the last D&D game that I... Well, I guess the second to last D&D campaign I ran, there was a point where they got a hold of a guy's spellbook, and there was a specialist wizard in the party, and I gave him completely new spells, things that were not even out of the player handbook or splat books or anything. I just made up spells that had brand new effects and such. Was it a big deal? No. But the point was that it was like, wow, it's kind of that sense of discovery. This is something unique because of the fact that these are not things that every other mage you run into is going to have ever seen before.
I love that. That's exactly the kind of thing that motivates me. Like I was saying earlier, that would be fantastic. I should have said that earlier on items. My favorite types of items are not the ones, like I said, that are +1 or +2 or whatever. Make something up. As a GM, I call on you to say, you're creative. You're creative people. You're telling a whole damn story about a whole world.
And you are a stupid, bigoted player who knows nothing. You can dance, make, monkey.
Well, but you can make up an interesting item, you know, what it does. Mm-hmm. Just as well as, you know, you're making up the rest of the story. So that is a fantastic thing for me.
Yeah.
So I guess that's where we'll wrap this one up. I mean, the gist of it is just think it through, give it context and meaning, know your players, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I think in some ways, this is kind of a growth for us as a podcast, because I know in our early days...
We have a growth?
Yeah, believe it or not. Because it, and
have I know we grown enough to reboot yet? Next episode, episode 1?
Dude, we reboot every episode.
Hey, that'll get us around that whole episode 200 debacle.
That's not a debacle, that's a farce.
If you boot more than once, then the additional ones must be rebooting, and therefore we reboot every single episode.
That's true.
Well, let me ask you guys real quick. Dan, as a player, not in this campaign, any game you play,
yes,
in general, how do you want to be rewarded?
I want to be rewarded really in two ways. One, almost every character I make, I create with an intentionally unresolved backstory or a goal that I want to be able to work through over the course of the game. In the case of Gnarl, it's building this Gnollish society. In some characters, it's been mysterious pieces of their past, whatever it may be. And the second thing is I do like a slow, but nonetheless existent, statistical and gear progression.
Pat?
For me, it's just like kind of like what I said. Most every character that I have, I am going to be happy with, you know, sort of a progression of new and unique items, different things to play with as I go through with the character.
Mm-hmm. Wayne?
Microtransactions per roleplay.
Bennies and stuff.
Bennies, yeah. Things awesome. Like that, especially if they can come from other players. That actually means more to me if it comes from another player than it does coming from the GM.
Nice. Yeah, I like that one.
And Chad?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I know.
Yeah,
I don't mean to sound facetious or snotty or contrary.
Right.
Honestly.
It's a chance to participate in the story.
Yeah. Allow me to play in the game.
Yeah.
Not even to have narrative equal control and blah, blah.
Yeah.
Let me play there, hang with my friends, and let's tell us a great story together.
Meaningful.
Yeah. That's what I want.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you guys next time, hopefully with a new auction or, I don't know, something of interest. But anyway, have great games, and we will catch you all then.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.